Hi, Ada. When I was 15, I became obsessed with the play Hamlet. To be fair, I was obsessed with Shakespeare in general at that time. During my freshman year of high school, I would cut gym class to read Othello and other plays in the library. Something about Shakespeare felt magical and beautiful and freeing all at once. There's something about a writer that has so much rhythmic fun with language, not to mention someone who has as much to say about gender and society as Shakespeare does. I loved most of the plays I read, but the one that spoke to me, the character that spoke to me the most, was Hamlet. Rumored to be inspired by Shakespeare's young son, Hamnet, who died at the age of 11, Hamlet concerns a young man who we meet at a critical turning point in his life. See, here's Hamlet's problem. He knows something to be true, that his uncle Claudius recently murdered his father, the king of Denmark, usurped the throne, and married Hamlet's mother, the queen, but he can't actually let himself believe it. He needs proof, and even when he gets it, in the form of a confession, guilty behaviors, and his father's literal ghost straight up telling him how everything went down, he still can't quite seem to reconcile the two competing truths in his brain. To put it in Exo-Jane terms, my uncle betrayed me in the worst possible way. I still can't bring myself to kill him. When I was first falling in love with Hamlet, I didn't see it as a trans story, quite simply because I didn't know what trans was. I saw it as a story about someone who everyone keeps trying to fix. Because of Hamlet's highborn station, everybody keeps kowtowing to him and trying to placate him, but nobody seems that interested in actually talking about what just happened. They don't see what Hamlet is going through. He just lost his father and everyone in his life, with the exception of his best friend Horatio, is not only dead set on not talking about it, but politically motivated to sweep the murder under the rug. To make things worse, the Norwegian prince Fortinbras, whose family has had beef with Hamlet's own dynasty for ages, is heading to Denmark to attack the weakened state in its now headless position. In the midst of all this, Hamlet is just trying to survive and find some fucking truth in a world of politically motivated lies and falsehoods. All this was enough to make me love it. And then I headed to college, firm in the feeling that I knew all there was to know about this play, it having lived in the volume and book of my heart for years. I took a class my sophomore year that showed me an even more intriguing side to Hamlet. In the class, which was about German culture and its impact on film history, a professor told us about a man named Edward P. Vining, an early 20th century American writer whose primary scholarship was surrounding Hamlet. And Vining's own theory is that Hamlet was actually assigned female at birth. Not only did he write an entire book about this theory called The Mystery of Hamlet, an attempt to solve an age-old problem, pointing to Hamlet's gender as the true question mark at the heart of the play, the theory caught the eye of Danish stage actress Aste Nielsen in the early 1910s. She loved the theory so much that she produced an entire movie based on it, with herself taking the role of the gloomy dame as Afab. She wasn't the only female Hamlet, either. There was a long line of female stage Hamlets in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, including legendary actress Sarah Bernhardt, who cast herself in the role and filmed a part of it, giving us our first ever on-screen Hamlet in 1899. There have been plenty of women Hamlets, and through the years, writers have commented on Hamlet's envy of traditional masculinity and uncertainty within his own gender as being key elements of his character. But for me, the case for a trans Hamlet is even simpler than all that. In this play, Hamlet is essentially doing what every trans person has to do for the first few years, maybe even decades, of our lives. Pretend that something huge isn't going on inside of us when it is. Hamlet has to hold two painfully opposed truths in his head at the same time. His personal truth, and the truth that the world at large accepts. I mean, what the fuck is truer to the trans experience than that? I'm Henry Jardina. I'm a writer, a critic, and a trans guy. My pronouns are he, they.
And I am Ada Rhode Short, an activist, academic engineer, and queer trans woman whose pronouns are she, her.
This is Totally Trans, Searching for the Trans Canon, where we talk about some of the most well-known figures from film, literature, and media.
And tell you why we think they deserve to be part of the trans cultural canon.
Strap in, because this is the week when I tell you why Hamlet is totally trans. There's been a lot of speculation about Hamlet in the 400-odd years since it was written. Critics have discussed the gay overtones of Hamlet's relationship to his best friend Horatio, the only person in the play he really trusts, as well as with Fortinbras, the military manly man Hamlet seems to wish he could be. But only one scholar, to my knowledge, had the balls to claim that Hamlet was assigned female at birth, and that was Edward P. Vining. In his 1881 book, The Mystery of Hamlet, Vining posits that Hamlet's nature is essentially feminine, from the way he spurns Ophelia's love, to his feelings about marriage, to his envy of Fortinbras and the men who, for a fantasy and trick of fame, go to their graves like beds. But Vining, in relying on sexist, essentialist ideas about male and female constitution, kind of misses the mark, in my opinion. What I love about Hamlet is that the transness is already there. It's Shakespeare, so of course it is. And Shakespeare's time, along with his plays, was full of a lot of gender fuckery. Quite famously, cis men played female roles on the stage during the Elizabethan period, since it was seen as socially unacceptable for women to perform as actors. There's even a theory out there that one of the original Globe players, known as Orphan Tully, was trans. They weren't the only one. While Shakespeare was writing Hamlet, another gender rebel was making a name for themselves. Mary Frith, known as the Roaring Girl, was a famous cutpurse who dressed and acted like the Roaring Boys, who were known for being loud, rude, often drunk, petty thieves. Not to be outdone, Frith, also known as Moll Cutpurse, wore men's clothes and was often imprisoned for the crime of cross-dressing. She was also a diehard royalist and bred bull mastiffs in her home, giving each of them their own beds, which personally, goals. She also smoked and performed on stage in men's clothes. She was the subject of several contemporary plays, and they called her both a tomrig, or tomboy, and a hoyden. And as one account explains, Frith could not endure that sedentary life of sewing or stitching. A sampler was as grievous to her as a winding sheet. And on her needle, bodkin, and thimble, she could not think quietly, wishing them changed into sword and dagger for a bout at cudgels. Which, to be honest, sounds a lot like the opening of Yentl, and also a lot like Hamlet himself, who couldn't think quietly either.
When Hamlet begins, the Kingdom of Denmark is reeling from the death of their king and the very swift inappropriate marriage of the dead king's brother Claudius to Hamlet's mother, Queen Gertrude. Even though everyone seems kind of grossed out by this, no one except Hamlet finds it deeply disturbing that his mom and uncle are now raw-dogging. There's something else shady going on. This spectral figure keeps showing up to the gates of the palace, and it seems to be trying to warn the kingdom of impending doom. Horatio, Hamlet's closest friend from childhood, tells Hamlet about the ghost, and when they track it down, it's got a tale to tell. The ghost is Hamlet's father, and he confirms that he was murdered by his own brother and is stuck in between heaven and hell because of the way he was killed. This is a lot for Hamlet to take in, and he wants to avenge his father's death, but he keeps doubting himself and his father's guidance. See, Hamlet is not a violent person by nature. In fact, he wishes he was more violent, like young Fortinbras, who is on the verge of attacking Denmark to avenge his own father's death years ago. Pretty much everyone is eager for Hamlet to be more of a traditional man. His uncle Claudius and his mother both tell him that his grief over his father's death is unmanly and ridiculous, even though it literally just happened. The people of the court, too, think that Hamlet needs some help jump-starting his heterosexuality. Polonius, Claudius's right-hand man, basically throws his daughter Ophelia at Hamlet just so he can be a complete asshole to her. And Hamlet's friends, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, basically keep telling him to buck up, buddy. It's fine that your dad just died. Get over it. They're friends because they obviously used to fuck.
Yeah, that's all three. All three of them.
Mm-hmm. All three of them. It's not subtle.
Yeah, whatever went down in Wittenberg was really gay.
Whatever went down in Wittenberg.
I want a prequel, quite frankly. Somebody make it.
But Hamlet is torn between his disbelief at what happened to him and his desire for revenge. And in the end, he dies in a duel with one of his best friends, Laertes, along with pretty much everyone else. By the time Fortinbras arrives, basically everyone in the court is dead, Fortinbras honors Hamlet before taking the crown, and in doing so becomes the only person in the entire play to honor Hamlet and his unique claim to manhood. He says,
"Bear Hamlet like a soldier to the stage, for he was likely, had he been put on, to have proved most royally. And for his passage, the soldier's music and the rites of war speak loudly for him."
Hamlet was a man, and he was a soldier and a fighter, but the war he fought was invisible.
You can tell this play is my life. I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, let's talk about your original context for the play. You kind of mentioned that in the cold open, but what's the first time you remember hearing about Hamlet or having it referenced?
I feel, well, something that's really sweet, actually, is when I was a kid, when my dad would, like, say goodnight to me. My mom was a labor and delivery nurse. She has since retired. But she basically worked, like, really crazy hours. So me and my dad spent some time alone, and he would just end up putting me to bed. And when he would tuck me in, he would say, "Good night, sweet prince. Flights of angels see thee to thy rest." Which is really, really sweet.
It's really sweet.
It's really sweet. My dad's great. You know, I give him a lot of shit, but he's great. But yeah, in addition to it just being really sweet because he was calling me a prince for a reason that, you know, who knows? But I think at some point I put two and two together and I was like, oh, that's what that's from. I don't remember when. I very distinctly remember, like, discovering Hamlet and reading it, but I forget what actually got me there. I think that I was just really into Kenneth Branagh movies, so that involved just, like, being Shakespeare adjacent. I really liked his love,
as
Labor's
all
Lost.
Young children are.
Every, like, 15-year-old, I had a huge crush on him, I found him, at the time, I really liked his version of Hamlet, because it was, like, raw and uncut, 4 hours. Now I'm like, he's the weakest link in this production. But I watched that movie a lot, I read the play a lot, and I remember being in high school, like, freshman year of high school was the year when I really was, like, getting deep into Shakespeare. And I remember writing this, like, spec script for, like, the real world, but it was, like, the characters in Hamlet, and they were just, like, being angry at each other. And then I wrote, like, Hamlet's die. I kept basically writing fan fiction. Like, throughout high school, I would write fan fiction. I was really obsessed with writing, like, Hamlet from Laertes' point of view, because I found him to be a really interesting character. I was really committed to Hamlet and Horatio being boyfriends.
How do you feel about Laertes and Ophelia's deal? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I mean, there's so much incest in this play.
Yeah!
Everybody is trying to fuck everybody else's sister and mom. Like, guys, fucking diversify. Like, I guess that's just, like, royal people shit. They're all, like, fucking their dads, and I don't know. But yeah, it's really gross. There's a lot of incest. And the way, one of the things that makes me the saddest about this fucking play is, like, poor Ophelia never had a chance to, like, toxic masculinity just surrounds her. Her dad is a piece of shit. Her brother is also, like, they're so obsessed with her virtue. They're so obsessed with her, like, not having sex. Meanwhile, who the fuck knows what Laertes is doing in France? And Polonius is just, like, a big old slut. I guarantee it. So, yeah.
I hate that so much. Yeah. I really don't want to think about Polonius specifically.
It's gross. But, like, he's fucking. You know he's fucking everybody. And
I hate that.
It's just, yeah. It's and one of the greatest things to me about this play, and I think also why high schoolers and, like, you know, 15-year-olds probably really love it, is, like, this is a universe where everyone is so fucking fake. And Hamlet's whole deal is, like, can somebody just be honest with me? Can one fucking person tell me the truth? And everybody's like, no. And it's just like, when you're a teenager and you're, like, an emo sad boy or sad girl or whoever, you're like, yeah, man, everybody's bullshit, man.
So, yeah, Hamlet's the Holden Caulfield of medieval Denmark.
Just as
violent.
That,
Yeah. 15-year-olds will look at him and be like, this is so deep. And then adults will look at him and be like, this guy's a
what
clown.
A fucking idiot. Yeah.
My first exposure to Hamlet, I guess, like, there's a lot of, like, cultural saturation around Hamlet, though it's always, it's like the to be or not to be soliloquy combined with, like, the Dear Yorick scene from, like, Act 5 with the skull, for some reason, is the, like, go-to, like, Shakespeare reference that I feel like a lot of people go to. which is interesting. I also wonder how many people have actually sat through a full 4-hour production of Hamlet or read all of Hamlet. I grew up in a theater family, and I remember definitely going to a professional production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which is like a more modern Hamlet spinoff, sort of. But I'm not sure I ever saw a full 4-hour version of like unabridged version of Hamlet in theaters. I'd like to someday. That sounds like that'd be really a lovely evening.
Yeah.
But it's long.
It is. It is. And like, one of the things I hate about when, I mean, I get that like, you don't want to put on a 4-hour play. People have bladders and need to pee and like live their lives. However, every time they cut Hamlet, they take out Fortinbras, and I'm like, okay, so what are the fucking stakes of this play then? Fortinbras is the, like, he's the whole point. Like, yes, there's the family drama, but the whole point is, like, it's one of those great, like, about faces where it's like, oh, all this tiny, petty bullshit you've been arguing about and thinking is so important, guess what? In context, doesn't matter at all. Like, and like,
yeah.
Throughout the whole play, Hamlet's been talking about how, like, yeah, someday I'm just gonna be dust, and I'm literally gonna be, like, a part of the earth and nobody's even gonna fucking remember. And then at the end it's like Fortinbras comes in and it's like, yeah, true. And so when they cut that part out, I'm like, okay, you just like cut the head off this play. Why? Yeah. But it's hard.
Yeah.
Cutting's hard.
So I've read all of Hamlet a few times because I'm also a huge Shakespeare nerd. I think people will be greatly surprised to find out the two of us have read a lot of Shakespeare.
What?
Who would have thought? Taming of the Shrew, though, is my favorite. And then I have really complicated things about feelings about 10 Things I Hate About You, which I feel like is a great teen rom-com.
Movie.
And also completely misses the point of Taming of the Shrew. But
yeah, so many productions do. So many productions
they do.
Make it like, ha ha, now she is just like, yeah, it's, yeah, that play is difficult, but it's really
It is. Well, and it. Yeah, you just really need, it all hinges on like literally Kate's final speech. We're getting off topic.
Yeah.
So my favorite version of Hamlet, actually I have two favorite versions of Hamlet. One, there's like a Simpsons Hamlet adaption that's super fast and honestly hits all of the beats pretty well. And it's very impressive how like well informed and how well done it was, in my opinion. But then the Royal Shakespeare Company version of Hamlet with David Tennant, which part of this is David Tennant's A Dreamboat, but is really good. It's 3 hours. It cuts out comparatively very little. It's one of the things where, like, I can't point to, like, big chunks that are missing. They did a really good job just kind of generally trimming, which is good because it's 4 hours, and honestly, a lot of this play didn't need to be in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, I feel like if it's... Shakespeare even did this with some of this other stuff, is there's like a part one and a part two. I feel like Hamlet probably should have been broken up.
Yeah.
Also, as far as like TV adaptions go, I'm surprised there's not more like a 5-part Hamlet miniseries with a part per act.
Yeah.
Would be like a really good thing to put up on Netflix.
That would be good.
Or something. Yeah, because it's fucking long. And
real long,
but really good, and it has so much going on and all these plot threads and characters that are hard to like jam in. But yeah, so that's like my, I guess, primary context for it.
Yeah.
Through this, I now got to experience Hamlet in another way, which is through, what is it called? Hamlet something
Hamlet,
revenge.
A tragedy of revenge. What is it?
I think maybe it's the tragedy of revenge, which is the one we talked about in the intro, where it stars, what's her name?
Austin Nielsen.
Austin Nielsen.
Is like she was like a huge, huge Danish star and lived like a crazy life and like apparently helped Jews escape like occupied Germany at a certain point. Yeah, like someone we can truly fucking stan. And also just like does a hilarious job with the role. Like she just decided like that shit's for me. Like her look is so fucking amazing. Like the minute I saw it, I was just like, yeah, this is exactly as how Hamlet should look. Like she's got eyeshadow. She's got like a bob.
It's so good.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's about 2 hours. It's a silent film and with cards. The cards are in German, but you can turn on English subtitles.
Oh.
And watch it with English subtitles, which is what I did. That's apparently Henry did.
Did I literally Google translated all the stupid like block text, but
yeah, you can just hit it on. Oh, I watched it on, I found the high quality version of it on YouTube, and I'll send you that link and we'll post it in the show notes.
Yeah. Cause it's good.
Yeah. But it's interesting. Cause one, it starts by talking about Vinning's book and saying like this theory on Hamlet to kind of like justify it. And then instead of it starting where Hamlet normally starts, I guess at the wedding feast / funeral. No, that's not true. There's a scene before that.
Marcellus and Bernardo, the like watchmen, are like, hey, there's this ghost. Maybe we should tell Horatio. And then Horatio's like, hey, we should tell Hamlet. And then you get to the, they erase the ghost.
And then you get to the wedding.
They don't give a shit
about
the ghost.
There's no ghost in it. Well, and that's very interesting because there's like no specter in the 1921 Hamlet outside of the specter of homosexuality because there's no way to look at it that isn't really gay because
it's so gay.
Like AFAB trans boy Hamlet with clearly the biggest crush on Horatio.
Yes.
And, confesses. Which should be an important part of every part of Hamlet.
Yes.
His crush. But.
Like, Horatio straight up says, when Hamlet's dying, he's like, I'm more like an ancient Roman than a Dane, and tries to kill himself. And Hamlet's like, no, I'm an asshole, and my last selfish act on this earth is saying, you can't die, Horatio. You have to just, like, deal with Fortinbras and tell my story. But yeah, like, it's so implicit to me. Like, we all know Shakespeare was a huge, flaming bisexual. Like, he wrote, there are always these male relationships, and like, lesbian relationships abound, like everywhere, queerness everywhere. And like, they're, the fact that it's so like, there is this like breathless, like teen boy quality to like Hamlet and Horatio, I think, where they're like, they only trust each other and it's like them against the world. But also there's a weird power dynamic. And yeah, in the Asta Nielsen movie, she like confesses her love to Horatio and they make it this love triangle where Horatio loves Ophelia and Hamlet is disgusted by Ophelia because Ophelia's a girl.
Yeah.
Like,
but then there's also this part where Hamlet like looks Ophelia up and down with like such like, like bites his lip and is like, yeah, I'm going to fucking destroy you. And it was like, oh damn.
Yeah. It gets,
get it, Hamlet.
It's a horny, horny adaptation, which is great thing. And then also like, yeah, she basically says to the camera at a certain point, she just like sits down and talks to the camera, is like, I'll make them think I'm mad. And that's kind of how we establish, which is like a simplification. I mean, basically that's what Hamlet does, but it's because of the ghost and because of whatever. So like, it doesn't quite make sense, but it's also like just kind of an interesting, like weird interpretation that like,
well, let's step back really quick and talk about the structural differences between the 1920 version and the play. First of all, it starts, I guess, like the day Hamlet is born.
Yes, the day 30 years
really,
before. Yeah.
Yeah. So where the king of Denmark is in a battle with Fortinbras's father, and this is the battle where he kills Fortinbras's father and therefore like wins a bunch of the lands that like become part of Denmark that Fortinbras is all pissed off about. But the king is also wounded and they think he's going to die. And Hamlet's born that day and is assigned female at birth, but the nurse is like, you need to say this is a boy, otherwise you won't be able to be the king anymore.
Yep.
So then she's like, okay, go announce it's a prince named Hamlet, and then the king shows up and he's like, I'm fine! And she's like, oh, I did a whoopsie-doopsie.
Yeah. Very weird.
And and then we get to see, what is it called,
Wittenberg.
Boarding school.
The Wittenberg. Horny fucking boys boarding school.
Yeah, that Hamlet goes to, and it has like big, like Hamlet high energy. Like it's a all boys school, as I'm assuming schools were at that point, but it's unnecessarily horny. And you're introduced to like a young Fortinbras and a young Laertes and Horatio. Weirdly, I don't think there's a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern who were his friends from school, which I feel like should have definitely been there, but they cut that out for time.
Right.
And then we go to Hamlet finding out his father is dead and him returning from school, which this is where, this is the second scene of the play, is the wedding slash funeral of his father slash the wedding of his uncle to his mom. But he shows up and he's all like weird and moody about it. There's no ghosts in the 1920s version, which is interesting. Instead, he finds out from, I think, a farmer is like, yep, he is bitten by a snake. That's how he died. But it looked like a snake from the dungeon, because they apparently have dungeon snakes.
And you see Claudius, like, finding the snake, like, opening the thing, and there's just a pit of snakes. Like, yeah, you see it, like, explicitly, which is an interesting choice, because it's like, in the play, you hear Claudius confessing, like, you hear him talking about it, the ghost says it. But in the movie, like, they needed to make it even more explicit, which makes the whole madness part even weird, because it's like, but we know this happened now, so an attempt at making Hamlet linear, which is always weird.
And I think a big part of it is they had to cut so much out because Hamlet is so dense and complicated, and like you kind of need a flow chart to keep track of all the relationships and who's scheming with who. Another major change in the so then this is a tiny thing, but then also I think in the play, they like say a snake bit him, and that's what killed the king, but it was like in actually Claudius pouring poison in his ear, which I guess ear poison.
Right.
Very Shakespearean. I don't think that's a real thing.
I mean, everybody's fucking with poison in the least subtle ways in this play. Like, the fact that at the end, if things had gone in Claudius's favor, like Hamlet would have drunk that wine, died, and Claudius would have been like, I don't know what happened there. Like, they're not subtle people. They're not like,
Well, also, I mean, his plan before that was like, send Hamlet to the King of England with a note saying
a letter,
immediately cut off Hamlet's head to give to the king, which is such a terrible plan.
Right. And then Hamlet's able to reverse, like by changing two words, essentially, and resealing the letter. It's like, well, now my friends are dead. And like, and there's like a pirate thing we don't see that they talk about, like
there's so much
happens.
Another big change in the 1920s movie is that Queen Gertrude is definitely like a co-conspirator, and it's really explicit, and even like Hamlet actually just like kills Claudius just by like burning him to death in a building, which is a wild change. He's just like, you Claudius,
cool,
and then still goes and has a sword fight with Laertes. But then King Gertrude is the one who gives him poison for his sword to be like, you must avenge Claudius. And she was like involved in the murder. Versus in the play, it's unclear if she even knew.
I don't think she knows. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in a modern context, when we look back at that play, I think it's hard to understand her motivation. Yeah. But I think she was kind of just a prop in the play. I don't think Shakespeare really thought about her motivations or her involvement in it as much as he's like, she is the kingdom. Like, she is the throne. That's why he needs to, like, get up in there.
Right. Hence the blaming that happens where it's like, everyone in this play is eager to blame Gertrude. Hamlet thinks his mom's being a slut. Like, no one takes a minute to sort of stop and be like, oh, like, here's this woman who's in a certain station, who's used to a certain kind of life, and, like, her husband dies, and that throws the entire kingdom into uncertainty. Like, to preserve her own safety, like, of course marriage is the choice. The fact that it happens to be, you know, her brother-in-law is fucked up, but it's also, like, to me, like, in feudal Denmark, like, that's probably the choice a queen is gonna make. Like, it's not as crazy. Yeah. It's gross, but it's not as gross as Hamlet sort of makes it out to be.
Yeah, it's kind of weirder in some adaptions, including the Royal Shakespeare Company adaption, because the same actor will play the king and play Claudius. And it's kind of like implied they're like twins.
Yes.
Well, which is weird.
I love that because there are subtle hints in the play as to what Hamlet's father was like and what their relationship was like. And like, you don't get a lot of it, but I think it's interesting to think about like the fact that Hamlet has this loyalty to his father, and he opens his first soliloquy is like, oh my God, these Claudius is so different than my dad. They're no more alike than like I am to Hercules. Like, guess what? Hercules goes insane and sort of so do you, Hamlet. So like, are you saying that the king and Claudius are actually like quite similar? In which case, that's kind of interesting, because then Claudius, like, it complicates their relationship, and it's like, oh, here's my fun uncle who's suddenly like, oh, whoops, dad part two. And like,
yeah,
you could say that Hamlet suffers from a lack of like good male role models, which, you know, in feudal Europe, once again, probably everyone did. But like, he's constantly searching for like the type of man to be. And like, his dad's dead. His uncle's on the other side being like, your grief is unmanly, and basically calling him the R word for being upset. Like, basically just being like, you're dumb. You know, yeah. Fathers die. I'm like, personally, when my parents die, I'm taking at least 5 months off to like go to the insane asylum. Like, that's just normal. Like, I will literally, like, be in a straitjacket. Like, that's normal grief. And this man is over here being like, well, your dad, you know, 2 weeks, let's keep it moving. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, I think the whole play is over, I think, about 2 months. I guess it has to be more than that, because then there's the travel to Europe. But I think,
yeah,
or travel to England. But I think that the play inside the play, because there's, yeah, a play inside a play, because it's Shakespeare and he loves plays inside plays, is 2 months after his father is buried, which gives you a lot, yeah, of context of like, wow, this all escalated very quickly. Yeah. And he's just being like, oh, clearly he has this line that's like, well, so at this point, Hamlet's acting insane to,
right,
throw Claudius off of his trail so that he doesn't realize like that he's scheming against Claudius. They'll just think like, oh, Hamlet's just like lost his mind.
Right.
But he has this line where he's like, oh, I'm clearly fucking insane because I'm still mourning my dad who's only been, oh no, I think it's 4 weeks because it's two.
Yeah.
It's like two spans of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And he's like, yep, I've clearly lost my mind because I'm, yeah, still mourning this man who raised me, who died several weeks ago, that all of you seem, right, to have forgotten. And it's like, yeah, that seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Weirdly, these like emotional outbursts, as well as all of the deep homoeroticism, are what kind of inspired this take by Vinnig,
mm, yeah,
of Hamlet being trans, which I think is really funny, because I think that also says a lot about like men in the early 20th century. Is they're like,
yeah,
the only excuse to feel feelings is if you're secretly a woman.
You must be a girl. Yeah, literally like, his constitution is feminine. A real man would never, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, so like, real men can't have feelings and be interesting and talk about how they're sad? Like, okay. Yeah, it's an interesting like path that he took to get there.
Yeah. Well, and it also has kind of like this bizarre eggy logic to it too.
Right.
Where he's like, yes, Hamlet is secretly a woman for having feelings, which is something you can only write if you're secretly a woman because you have feelings.
Ooh, Edward.
Yep.
It's true. And like the logic of like, because Hamlet is clearly in love with Horatio and because they clearly have this like pretty much explicitly sexual bond, like, therefore Hamlet must be a girl. Like, I love weird like early 20th century interpretations of like, it's not gay because secretly, like, there's, I think Sylvia Scarlett is an example of this. There are a few weird movies where they sort of do that, and they sort of, like, retrofit it into, like, a straight romance.
And we see that actually in a lot of, like, explanations of trans women from the early 20th century, is even, like, Lily Elbe, the other Danish princess.
Yes.
Ahistorically was kind of labeled as, like, oh, probably intersex. Yep, that's true. As was one of, like, the justifications for giving her treatment, even though that's, like, historically really debated. And we saw that with, like, other trans women of the times. They had to kind of be like, oh, yeah, they, sure, they're trans, but it's actually just an intersex disorder. Which also carried on through, like, the Christine Jorgensen story, which we're, yeah, going to be watching on the 24th, I think, for a live stream.
Yeah.
Nice. Is also ahistorically is, like, is secret was intersex all along.
Right. And like Virginia Prince even was like, we're not lesbians, like we're straight, like that whole thing of like, no, yeah, it's just about fixing gayness. Like, this is what makes sense. Yeah, that was embedded.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Ding. What's up? It's me, Henry, and this is our ad announcement. So we're having a live stream on May 15th. That is next... Yeah, that's next week, next Saturday. 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. PST. So yeah, join in. We're going to watch Christine Jorgensen's story. It's going to be really fun. Also, please apply to be our next co-host. We are keeping applications open through May, so we'll post a link in the show notes to all the instructions and all that. And yeah, thank you for listening. We love you. Bye. One of the things that I find interesting about Hamlet is his relationship to women and the view he has of women in general. Like when he criticizes Claudius, it's the basic like, fie, murderer, villain. When he criticizes his mother or later Ophelia, it's much, much deeper. He literally tells Ophelia, get thee to a fucking nunnery. You shouldn't have kids because the human race blows, which like, I agree with that, but like rude to someone that you're dating. Like he tells her that like, yeah, he wishes she were uglier because then he would like, then it would make sense because she's lying and it's confused. Like he tells his mom, basically.
Well, yeah. he says like, you ruin, right, men basically, yeah, to Ophelia as well. As like you need to get to a nunnery because you shouldn't, yeah, have babies because you're toxic and you ruin, right, men. And that's the worst thing you could possibly, right, do.
Like because the women in his life are controlled by men in a patriarchal society, like Gertrude, not in a real position of power, even though she's a queen. Ophelia, similarly, she's like a member of the high court, but in a tenuous position where her brother and her dad are constantly controlling her and telling her what to do. And Hamlet basically says, well, it's your fault, like frailty, thy name is woman, whatever. And to me, that reads as like a very, like before I came out when I was a teenager, all I wanted to do was distance myself from women. And because of that, I was a fucking asshole. I'd be like, women are this, women are that, blah, blah, blah. I'm, yeah, not that thing. And of course it didn't work because people would just look at me and be like, that's funny. That kid hates themselves a lot. Like, cool.
Oh, God.
Like, that was basically the response. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, to me, there's something really, really trans about his attempts to really distance himself from women while still, like, being very honest with himself about how, like, he doesn't consider himself traditionally masculine and kind of wishes that he were more warlike or more butch. Like, it's just an odd tension.
Yeah. A lot of that energy of like misogynistic trans,
yes,
boy,
sadly,
that hopefully you don't know one, but you might, because there's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Ophelia is also interesting in that like Hamlet uses her as a plot. Like, he basically just, like, gaslights, mm-hmm, her to convince people he's crazy because he, like, writes her, right, love letters and then pretends not to, right, know her and then, like, flirts with her and, like, goes to, like, watch the play, right, with her. But then the whole play was, like, just a ruse to, like, fuck with Claudius. And then he stabs her dad later that, yeah, night. He doesn't know it's her dad, but he, like, kills Polonius, which,
yeah,
is not great for Ophelia's rapidly degenerating mental health, is to find out, like, oh, that boy you liked? Yeah, he murdered your, yeah, father. And then she drowns herself in a river. And then, I guess, Laertes, even before that, is raising a revolution because he's like, fuck you. Yeah. My dad is dead. I am somewhere in the line of succession, presumably. Yeah. Hamlet can't be the next king.
Yeah. Ophelia, too, like, well, first of all, Hamlet is like, so gross. With like, that's one of the things that really pisses, like when they sit down at for the play and he makes like a very crude sex joke, just like within earshot of everybody. And it's just kind of like, you're such an asshole. And yeah, he's like doing this performance thing clearly to like get his mom's attention. In some productions, you will notice that Gertrude and Ophelia are cast to look alike The Kenneth Branagh version is a good example of this. But then also, like, what's interesting, too, in regards to, like, his relationship with Ophelia and the craziness, like, he's putting on all these weird... He's, like, playing all these parts, and, like, he decides when it's convenient for him to play, like, the love... Like, I loved her! Like, he does not love Ophelia until he jumps into that grave and starts being like, she was everything to me! Like, similarly with the madness... Like, at the end, he apologizes to Laertes before they duel, and he's like, it's my madness, whatever. And I'm kind of, like, thinking about how, yeah, how when I was younger, or even, like, right after I came out, I would use sort of, like, my bitterness and unhappiness about all the shit from, like, being trans and being closeted as an excuse for my bad behavior. And weirdly, and, like, being very actorly and kind of, like, acting out a lot of, like, fake it till you make it stuff. And that reminds me of Hamlet a lot.
Well, and, I don't think Hamlet gave a fuck about Ophelia until she died.
Shit.
And then it just became a part of his, like, woe is me thing. Which is a thing Shakespeare... does a lot, actually, is he's really good about, like, writing people kind of being pieces of shit and being like, you didn't actually care about that person. You were just being selfish and melodramatic. Yeah. A lot of times, those characters, though, are a lot younger than Hamlet. Because he's surprisingly old. Like, when Romeo and Juliet do dumb stuff like that.
They're 14.
When basically every character, they're all shitty teenagers. Versus Hamlet's, like, 30 and moody and useless.
Right. And knows it. Yeah.
And I. Yeah, which doesn't help.
And it feels kind of like I sort of understand the frustration with being in a situation where your parents, one of whom is your murderous uncle, are trying to push you into relationship as if, like, see, all better. Now you have a wife and now you're going to get in line with masculinity and just be whatever. And he's like, fuck that. But of course, like a dumbass, he decides to take that out on Ophelia rather than, you know, Claudius, just having a conversation with Claudius, like, anything. Like, he would rather just yell.
Or honestly, just stab him.
Like, stab him, dude.
Like, but...
Save yourself some time.
Like, you all...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been at... It's, like, halfway through, I guess. It's just after the play, when he, like, forces Claudius to kind of, like, confess his sins in the church. And Hamlet goes to, like, murder him.
Yeah.
That's, like... 2 hours in, we could have saved a lot of fucking time. You just stabbed him.
Yeah, made it a lot easier. But also, something very interesting, too, is obviously this play is a lot about death, just something that I love about it, and kind of like what happens to bodies when they die, sort of what makes, what distinguishes a living body from a dead one, like what the sort of purpose is. And one of the really interesting things that the gravedigger says when he's digging Ophelia's grave and they're having that Yorick conversation, the gravedigger's being kind of like a smart ass. And Hamlet's like, what man is to be buried here? He's like, no man. He's like, what woman? He's like, no woman. And then he's like, well, who? He's like, someone that was a woman, but bless her soul, she's dead. And Hamlet often talks about himself and his father being like between heaven and earth, being in this purgatory state, which you could read as being gendered. And you could also read as just being like, yeah, what is a fucking body? Like, what is this thing that I'm carrying around that kind of hates me, that kind of doesn't do what I want it to do and kind of makes me feel insane? Like, he just like gets into a lot. He's like, what is a man? What is whatever? And like, there's a lot of discussion of just like, what does it mean to be telling the truth? What happens to you when you die? Like, what happens to your physical body where you're a woman one moment and then you're dead and you're not a man or a woman anymore? Like, those kinds of, like, weird liminal spaces are, like, everywhere.
Yeah. Well, in Hamlet, Hamlet is obsessed with the idea of no longer being.
Yeah.
Which is a form of no longer being a man. Don't kill yourself out there, lovelies. Please don't. We'll be personally mad at you. I just want you to know.
I'll come to you in the afterlife as a living ghost, like Hamlet's father, and be mean is what will happen.
Yeah. But within the context of Hamlet and it being metaphor in theater, talking about both being as a man and then no longer being, I think, is super trans. It also, in that, that's not a, in the Dear Yorick scene. I think that's like Act 5, Scene 1 or something. Yeah, he says, what is a man? What are Hamlet's ideas of masculinity in your mind, Henry? What do you think Hamlet thinks being a man is?
I think, like a lot of trans guys, is led by a very, like, he-man vision of what it means to be male. And I think, like, obviously the context of it is like, yes, this is feudal Denmark. This is an era where everybody is fighting everybody. And that's basically what royal people do with their time. Or they're like, go fight this war for me. Like, sure. But also just his obsession with the sacrificial aspects of masculinity, like that great, the famous speech at the end of Act One when he's communicating with Fortinbras, dude, and they're sort of telling him, like, yeah, he's got this army and they're ready to die. And he's just like, all these men are literally gonna go to their graves for like the dumbest, most imaginary fucking reason possible. Why can't I be like those guys? Like, he just wants to be, like, he always is talking about, like, I kind of want to annihilate myself, or just I want to, like, take orders, what, like, all these things that he's too smart to do. But he has this fantasy of being like this sacrificial, like, military man who is just like a cog in a machine. And I think for him, like, that's the most honest way that, like, people live their lives. And it's kind of like, you know, when rich people, like, fantasize about, like, oh, the simple peasants, like, that he's kind of doing that. He's kind of like, oh, if I wasn't so rich and like royal, yeah, my life would be easy. But he's also genuinely envious of Fortinbras and of men who, like, have this purpose and use violence to, like, make a statement, and he wishes he could be more like that. And most of us reading the play are like, we all wish you could be kind of less violent in your language, Hamlet. Like, you're taking on and giving out so much violence just by yelling at all the people in your life so much, mostly the women in your life. Like, all you need to do is kind of, like, be the man that you already are and stop caring about warfare and stop equating violence with masculinity and you'll be good. And again, like, that's an obvious message of, like, early trans guy coming out. Hopefully you have someone in your life who's a mentor who's like, listen, masculinity doesn't mean violence. There are other ways to be a man. But of course, Hamlet has no role models. He's got shit.
Well, and at least this is, like, my interpretation, I guess. One, he's been at Wittenberg learning to be a man, presumably, for quite some time, because he's getting up there to just be hanging around.
30.
Yeah. But, sorry, I just had a moment where I'm like, oh, I'm, like, Hamlet-aged.
I realized that, too, because I was, like, listening, and then the Gravedigger says that it's been 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like,
I think Hamlet learned his model of masculinity from his father, who we know has fought in wars and won wars and, like, won kingdoms, which is why Fortinbras is like, I'm taking it back, asshole. Yep. But then additionally, there's, like, stuff like Hamlet's father is in his armor as a ghost. Like, he's, like, wearing armor and dressed for war. Which Hamlet isn't. Traditionally, Hamlet's wearing, like,
a girly
little tight
and a doublet. Skirt. Yeah. And, like, slippers.
And looking hella cute.
Fashion.
And he's, like, distinctly not dressed for battle. And he's even surrounded by all these people that are, like, presumably more militarily achieved than him. And he just feels, I think he feels like he can't measure up to that, and then is struggling with the idea of, like, oh, my father, the only thing I can do to be, like, redeemed in my father's eyes and make him proud is to commit a shit ton of murder.
Yeah.
And that's clearly what your dad wants, Hamlet.
Yeah.
I guess that is clearly what your dad wants, because he came back from the dead just to be like, if you want to be a real man and be the king of Denmark, you've got to commit it. go murder the shit out of my brother.
But don't do it. Don't do it in a way that, like, sends him to heaven. Like, don't murder him in the there are all these stupid rules.
Murder him straight to hell.
Like, all these rules about how to be killed so that you end up in a certain, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, the fucking, like, theology shit of this. But also, Hamlet, like, there's an interesting moment where, yeah, he spends this whole play, like, why can't I be a military man? Why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? Then at the end, he's about to face off with Laertes, and he's like, brings Horatio in, and he's like, secret. They think Laertes is better than me because he spent all this time at, like, fencing school in France. I've been working my ass off, and I actually am going to beat him. And, like, as a result, Hamlet is like really good at fencing, and people, everyone's just like, what the fuck? Like, everyone is like shocked that Hamlet has a skill. And like, that sort of leads weirdly to this escalation of like Laertes being really pissed off and Gertrude taking the poison drink that's meant for him. Like, it, that sort of leads everything into a spiral. It's like, oh, like, I have to live up to all these expectations. But then when Hamlet finally is good at something, everyone dies, which is an interesting message. I'm like, oh, what's that about?
I mean, yeah, I think that's just, that's just when the Curb Your Enthusiasm music starts playing. But by the end of the play, Hamlet's stabbed Polonius through a curtain because he thought it was Claudius spying on him, talking to him and his mom. Ophelia then drowns herself.
Or is she killed by Gertrude?
Rosencrantz and...
That's my favorite theory.
Well, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern get beheaded by the King of England. Yeah. Hamlet then returns. Claudius tries to give poison, pours poison wine for Hamlet to presumably drink if he somehow survives the duel with Laertes.
Yeah.
And he poisons Laertes' sword to make sure Hamlet will die. But then I think Laertes stabs Hamlet first, and then their swords get mixed up, and then Hamlet stabs Laertes. Yeah. But he like just, he didn't even need the poison sword because he just murders the shit out of Laertes, and then goes, and then Gertrude drinks the wine, and then she's dying. And then he just goes and stabs Claudius, and then everyone dies. But Horatio, who's the only person left outside of, I guess, a bunch of rando guards who are named.
He wants to die.
Yeah.
So badly.
Yeah.
Which is, Horatio gets really short shrift in this because it's like, he's one of the only characters in the play that's just seems like a good guy. Honest, like, kind, cares about Hamlet, is not swayed by weird, like, political bullshit motives, like the Polonius family is, like, he is just, like, a good guy who cares about his friend who's now dying and, like, wants to follow him, but of course can't do that, like, which is always sad because I'm like, what the fuck is gonna happen to Horatio? Like, is he just gonna be, like, engulfed by the Fortinbras Empire? Like, I guess that's the point. It's just like the slate is wiped clean. Like, the story of this family is over. And now we're gonna go sort of back. And then maybe in 30 years, Fortinbras Jr.'s child is gonna then, like, be defeated by... Well, no, because no one had any babies. The Hamlet line is over. So,
yeah. On a completely not very related to it note, I just wanna bring it up because we mentioned it last in our Bicentennial Man episode. Well, so there's the Hamlet line to Horatio. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Mm-hmm. And then that line continues. It's hard to find the whole line by just Googling it, apparently. But then he says the part about what dreams may come, which is the name of a movie with Robin Williams that we talked about last week. There was no insight to this. I just thought that was fun while I was going over Hamlet and being like, oh yeah.
Also, Robin Williams plays Osric, and he does a pretty good job in the Kenneth Branagh version. Like, there's a hilarious moment.
Really?
Yeah, but it's sad because in that version they just show you Osric being killed, which I'm like, why? You needed to kill Robin Williams on top of all that? There are some great, I mean, Billy Crystal's The Gravedigger. There's some great casting, also some bad casting.
No way! I need to see that version. I haven't seen it. I have a huge crush on Billy Crystal.
Like, he's like, he does a great fucking job. He brings his all. Robin Williams also does. There's a hilarious moment where they're the sword fighting scene, and at a certain point it just devolves, and they're just savagely, like, running across the palace, and, like, they crash into, like, a glass, like, window, and Robin Williams is like, no points either way! Like, nothing. Like, he keeps being like, oh, that's a hit, that's a hit. And then they just, like, it's so ridiculous.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's really good. And he actually, it's weird. He plays that character as basically explicitly gay, like, almost to the point of lisping, which is weird, but it also sort of works. I don't know. It's an interesting movie.
Robin Williams, though, definitely has had penises in his mouth. At the very least, girl penises. Yeah. I don't know if Robin Williams ever had boy penises in his mouth, but Robin Williams has choked on some girl dick.
Show business.
I don't know that 100% for sure. Like, I don't have that as a first-hand account from anyone. It's just he has that energy, and I would have fucked Robin Williams. Yeah. So
chaotic bi energy.
So I'd assume someone else would have. Yeah. Yeah,
in the best possible way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a weird adaptation because, again, Kenneth Branagh is a bit too old. The set design is really interesting. The music is really good, but it's also, like, visually just a lot. And a lot of great actors are kind of wasted. Like, Julie Christie is Gertrude, and Gertrude is just, like, a sad role. Like, I know, like, actresses probably really want to play that role, but it's also really... She only gets, like, one monologue where she's describing Ophelia's death. Ophelia's played by Kate Winslet, who, again, it's just hard...
Well, and she doesn't...
To see it.
She doesn't even get a monologue. She gets a dialogue. No. Like, she distinctly doesn't get an aside or a soliloquy. Nothing. She just... interacts with characters, which is really fascinating. Yeah. And it's one of those things that makes her like a non-character as far as Shakespeare's plays go, because she doesn't express her thoughts or her intentions. Like normally Shakespeare's main characters have these asides where they like explain what's going on behind their eyes. And even Polonius gets asides, but they're like comical asides where he's like, turns to the audience and is like, waka waka.
Yeah, he's like the most obnoxious. Ugh, I hate Polonius so much. And I hate the Polonius.
Did the Muppets ever do Hamlet?
Oh my God, I hope so. With Kermit. Yeah, I guess Kermit as Hamlet, Miss Piggy as Ophelia. Sam the Eagle would be Polonius, actually, I think, in that. Because he's pompous.
There's a handful of Hamlet references, but they've never just done a full. They've done a lot of Hamlet references.
They need to do a full one.
But a 4-hour
just straight Muppet face. Or no, like they should do the Muppet Christmas Carol where like every character is a Muppet except for Hamlet or except for like Claudius.
Yeah. Oh yeah, my God. No, Hamlet should be played by who is the moodiest 30-year-old around?
Billie Eilish. Not 30. She would be she would be a great Hamlet. Oh my God.
I like this. I like this plan a lot.
Hamlet lends itself to fan fiction, as we've seen.
As we've seen by this amazing 1920s fan fiction that we will post a link to.
Yes.
It was delightful. You can, if you're watching on YouTube, at least on the version I had, you can turn on English subtitles, which really helped. Henry, are there any other topics really quick you really wanted to touch on? Because we could talk about Hamlet for 4 hours easily.
Damn, I think we've covered it. We could talk about it forever. You talk about it forever. Wait, I feel like there was a question I wanted to ask. Oh, why did I just do that? Oh, okay. Two things, very quickly. The first is that the Edward Vining, like, idea plus the movie is very close to a movie called Homicidal. That's a William Castle movie that I'm sure I've discussed earlier that eventually we'll do an episode on because it's basically, like, a Psycho ripoff. But the plot in that is very similar where like someone gives birth to an AFAB and for some like estate, like you need to inherit money reasons, they force the child to like live as male. And then like at the end, you realize that they're like, that these two people who you've never seen in the same room for the whole movie are in fact the same person. And that like the process of being forced to present as male has like driven this person to murder, which I think is also just like a weird like plot that sort of keeps coming up where it's like very convoluted. And it feels like in the 20th century, like the only way writers could conceive of like possible transness or gender fuckery is like, there must be money at stake, which is weird. But
money or marriage.
It's like a loophole. Yeah.
A thing that we should also just really quickly, briefly mention, because otherwise I think someone will post about on Twitter. The Lion King is Hamlet. That's all. We're just going to say it. We're not going to discuss that any further. Oh, actually, better about that, though. The Lion King 1.5 is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern's story.
Yes, the gay origin story. Yes.
Yeah, it's great. So good. Love it. Okay. So, because I'm a huge nerd, I've made 4 categories for us to place things in. They include headcanons, things that are just trans because we want them to be, major gender stuff, lots of gender things happening, but not necessarily transgender things happening, all but explicit. Literally the only thing missing is the use of the labels that'd be appropriate for the time. And literally trans. It is literally a trans story with trans elements described in trans language of the time. Henry, where do you put this?
This is tough. I think if we're talking strictly about the play, I think major gender stuff. If we're talking about the film this specific film adaptation, all but explicit. But Hamlet as play, I would say major gender stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say, I think this is like literally all four categories, depending on how you cut it. If we're just talking about the original play, strong headcanon about Hamlet as trans, I can see that. So much gender stuff. Like, there's a lot of gender stuff happening.
Yes.
And very, like, trans masculine gender stuff happening.
Yes.
But then, if we talk about the 1921 version, it's, like, all but explicit and also kind of literally trans, but it's, like, forced masculinization trans. Which, oh, I'm going to start that as a thing. Everyone's, like, force femme.
Force masked.
But nobody wants to be force masked. Yeah. Go join a football. Oh, no, that's why. Yeah. Never mind. Because
literally
of trauma.
Abuse.
It
that's
just occurred to me
abuse.
As I said it, is it's like, oh, that was just my challenge.
Oh, no. Yeah. We've all been through the force mask moment.
Yeah. Fuck. Fuck. Yeah. Okay. Well, sorry about that, everyone. I apologize. Thank you for listening to this episode of Totally Trans, Searching for the Trans Canon.
We have a Patreon that can be found at patreon.com/totallytrans. If you back us at $3 or more per month, you can access our bonus episodes, the most recent of which is us talking with our guest from a few episodes ago, Julian K. Jarbo. Also, if you back us at $2 or more per month, you're going to access all our episodes 1 week early.
Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode, and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, because we live in a cyberpunk nightmare oligopoly.
Join us next week when Ada will be talking with Eilish Neelanigan about the legend of the Orky Shed of the Pacific Northwest. Totally Trans, Searching for the Trans Canon, is co-hosted by me, Henry Jardina, and you can find me on Twitter at punkgroucho. You can also find me at henryjardina.substack.com, where I write about film and masculinity.
And co-hosted by me, Ada Rhodes Short, who can be found on Twitter at the Ada Rhodes. That is the _ADA_RHODES.
All quotes and audio clips are being used under fair use.
And our season 2 theme music is Moonlight by Neil Azaz. We're changing the music next season. And it was found on Pixabay.
Until next week, keep searching. Should we count again? Or yeah, we'll be fine. When I was 15, I became obsessed with the play Hamlet. Hi, Ada. God, okay. Off to a great start.
Take 3.